Order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Council President Jones?
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And Reverend Karen Hernandez? Thank you.
Good evening. Will you pray with me? Loving God, we find ourselves surrounded by the peaceful, beautiful snow outside. We're grateful that we're in the midst of holidays and holy days that keep us mindful, too, of those who have no shelter from the snow, those who aren't able to adequately heat their homes or stay warm any place they go. Some of us are going to parties and celebrating, and others are still hungry the way they are all year round. God, you also inspire within us a sense of generosity, especially at this time of year. I give thanks for all of the organizations and individuals in our community who are reaching out in countless ways to help those in need, to help neighbors and strangers. And I ask that you would keep this spirit of generosity alive and well within us through all the seasons, all year long. Be among us as we enter into a season of celebration. Let your light shine even when the nights are so long and dark. Continue to guide our leaders, whether by starlight or by your wisdom, however they might receive it. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
If you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Richard Rhodes, if you would begin. Richard's going to give us an explanation on our final plat process.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Rhodes. At our last council meeting, Council President Jones had a question regarding the language in 6-2-4, specifically the portion of the sentence reading prior to the subdivider submitting for final plat approval. And the question was, does that mean that everything goes to council after the final plat is completed, those items in the code? Subsequent to the meeting, staff was able to get together and go through the procedure that they are following. And essentially, the procedure that they are following is, as you'll look at that 6-2-4, it has under section E, council action, and the things that council has to do as part of the approval. And then under G, it has it's the city engineer's process, and that is where that sentence falls. So staff has been considering that as part of the engineer's final plat submittal. Admittedly, it is ambiguous, so I will go in and make some changes to that so it's clear that that is a function of the city engineer. The issue being that if we held it up for city council approval after all those things were done, it delays the developer significantly in the process. So I ask that we keep the process as we've been doing, but I will tidy up the language a bit so it's clear in the future. I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Richard?
Richard, I just had one question so I understand this correctly. When the final plat comes to us, like tonight, are you saying the engineer has not received any application for a final plat at this time?
You say applications. No, you'll have the final plat provided also. The city engineer will also have that provided. But what you're doing is basically to determine if the final plat is in substantial conformance with the preliminary plat. Then those technical details are what the city engineer signs off on when those are completed, and that's how that interpretation has been. So prior to the subdivider submitting for final plat approval, that should probably mean to the city engineer for the checkoff, and that occurs after council has approved the final plat.
Okay.
And the city engineer then does that approval in the form of a memorandum.
Well, I understand our rule. That wasn't necessarily my question. My concern was that when it said on there that they had to have all that done before they could even submit for a final plat. But as you stated, you were going to change that. So, I mean, my thing would just, before they can get final plat approval, they need to have this all this done. And that would solve my concern. It would just, the way I read it was is that they couldn't even give you an application, turn it in or anything, until that was all done. And that was strictly my concern.
Right.
So that's the one
interpretation that can be what the procedure that's being followed now is. It gets submitted, council approves it, and then the city engineer goes through that checklist and issues that final memorandum confirming that those items have been done. So it can be submitted before those items are completed. City engineer then lastly signs off after those items are done and issues the memorandum.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it up to you. I mean, I'll leave it to you to, I don't have an issue with the way the city's actually processing it. I just want to make sure that this says we do it this way and this is the way we're doing it.
Yes.
And I'm fine. So
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. So the next item is the consent agenda.
Mayor, I just had one. I have to, after some discussion with our city attorney, I need to be disclosing that one of these bills that we pay is to a business that my wife works at. It looks to be a normal day-to-day operation that I have no input on. But it needs to be disclosed that it is a organization or a business that my wife currently is employed at.
Okay, so noted.
It. Thank you.
Anything else? If not, I'm going to make a motion.
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All in favor say, would you poll the council? Sorry, Chris.
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Consent agenda is approved. Public hearings. This is a public hearing in consideration to approve 16-03-ZC. Request for Michael Larson to rezone approximately 0.283 acres in city limits from current R6 residential zone to a central business district or CBD commercial zoning designation. The site is located at 368 North Linder Avenue, Cuna, Idaho. Trevor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members, good evening. For the record, Trevor Kessner, city planner. Address is 751 West 4th Street. The rezone application before you from the property owner, Michael Larson, is seeking approval to rezone approximately 0.283 acre parcel that is currently in city limits with an R6 zoning designation to a proposed CBD zoning designation. This is on North Linder Avenue. It's east of east side of Linder, south of 4th Street, between 3rd and 4th Street. If the rezone is approved, the commercial zoning designation would reduce the current residential building setbacks, and it would increase the allowable lot coverage in order to allow the applicant to expand the existing structure for future office and retail purposes and space in downtown. The CBD designation requires a design review approval of any proposed expansions to the structure, including renderings of elevations, landscaping, parking, fencing, colors, building materials, that sort of thing. The design review board would need to examine and approve such proposed improvements before a building permit would be issued. As stated in the staff report, the city engineer's comments, the site is currently served with city services with the exception of pressure irrigation. In the future, if the applicant wants to hook into the PI service, they would just need to relinquish their water right and pay those connection fees. They would also need to pay any increased sewer or water load capacity fees for the new use. They may also be required to pay impact fees to ACHD from going from a residential use to a commercial use as well. The applicant has been apprised of all the proposed conditions, and he has stated that he agrees with them. I didn't think the applicant was going to be here tonight, but he is, so that's good. The site is identified as medium-density residential in CUNA's comprehensive plan and the future land use map. It calls for residential use on this property. But staff believes that this rezone request is in harmony with and is compatible with the adjacent commercial uses in the CBD zone. And the rezone to a commercial use also aligns with the vision for downtown, as described in the downtown CUDA revitalization, the downtown revitalization plan. Agencies were notified, provide comment, neighbors were notified, legal notifications were published according to code and state law. And the site is actually posted to reflect tonight's hearing. Staff concludes the application complies with city code, more generally aligns with the vision for downtown set forth in the comp plan and the downtown corridor plan and the revitalization efforts. So we would forward a recommendation of approval to council. I'll stand for questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Trevor?
Mayor, I just had one question. Trevor, I didn't see where there was any comments on the neighborhood meeting. Was there any?
You know, I didn't see any comments written there. Obviously, you have in the packet of the attendees that were there.
Yeah.
I think there was maybe two.
Two, yeah.
Yeah. One of them was the daycare property owner, but no.
Okay. So you're not aware of any?
Comments noted, yeah.
Not aware of any. Okay, great. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you.
Okay, this is a public hearing, so can we have a motion to open the public hearing?
I move we open the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to open the public hearing on 16-03-ZC. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. I don't have anyone who has signed up to testify in the matter. Is there anybody who wishes to testify? Okay. Yes.
The applicant is here. For any questions.
Okay. Does council have questions for applicant? Nope. Okay. With that, then we can have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing on 16-03-ZC. Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza? Council President Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin-Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, the public hearing portion is closed, and the question is rightfully before council.
Mayor, I move that we approve rezoning of 16-03-ZC.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve 16-03-ZC. Any further discussion? All in favor say, oh, Richard, did you have?
Mayor, I have some questions, but I can't find them on my computer right now. I think it had to do with the parking lot. And I'm trying to remember, it had something to do with how you bear with me for a moment.
I think a lot of the specifics in design will probably have to come up through the design review process and that type of thing, so I don't know that they would even be able to answer specific questions at this point.
Well, my question was, if it didn't meet code, it would be discussed. And I guess I'm wondering who discussed, who makes the final decision if it doesn't meet code, the parking.
Wendy?
Oh, to parking? That'll be discussed at the design review. It's part of design review.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussion? We have a motion and a second to approve 16-03-ZC. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Item 7A, this is the one that, this is the final plat, 16-14 that we pulled from the agenda
because of the discussion and the question from the last meeting. So normally this would be a consent item. So if council has no further discussion on that one, we would accept a motion.
Mayor, I move that we approve final plat 16-14-FP.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve final plat 16-14-FP. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Item 7B, consideration to approve 16-04-LLA, a lot line adjustment from the applicant seek LLA approval to finalize the mutual solution agreed upon by both parties to solve an encroachment issue on Mr. Smart's property. Mr. Cronin at 556 West Trinity Street unknowingly had structures which were situated on a portion of Mr. Smart's parcel at 925 North Gorey Street. Upon both parties' discovery of the encroachments, rather than move the fence and correct the issue, they negotiated an agreement to record a new record of survey to move said property line, eliminating the encroachments. Is there any questions on that from council? Looked like both parties were happy with their own solution. So. Mm-hmm.
I move we approve 16-04-LLA.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve 16-04-LLA, lot line adjustment. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. This is continued from the November 15th, 2016 CUNA City Council meeting. Consideration to approve resolution number R88-2016, awarding bid to Thusen Construction Incorporated in the amount of $440,432.63 for the Lake Hazel Sewer Main Project. This is a resolution awarding bid for the Lake Hazel Sewer Main Project to the Thusen Construction Incorporated in the adjusted amount of $440,432.63, directing expenditure of funds from the Sewer Fund, Water Fund, and Irrigation Fund for said project, and authorizing the mayor, city clerk, and city engineer to execute the contract documents with said bidder. Gordon Law?
I would be content to just vote on it.
Questions for Gordon?
Still short time for that. What's the bid?
$615,267?
Yes.
Okay.
So it wasn't
$440,000? No. If you remember right, with 3 weeks ago when we discussed this last, the intent was to go out of that meeting and to negotiate a reduced project so that we could get within budgeted funds. We did that. That necessitated some negotiation on unit prices, frankly, partly because not all feet of pipe are the same. Some of them are deeper and shallower. Some of them have deeper rock than others, and that didn't all stay the same. So there had to be an adjustment in unit prices, adjustment in quantities, and when it was all said and done. You will note in the memorandum there's a somewhat of an accounting to show where it fits with respect to budgeted funds. And I believe that was the intent when we walked out of the last meeting.
Okay, further questions for Gordon? Okay, thank you, Gordon. And the question is rightfully before council.
Mayor, I move that we approve resolution number R88-2016.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R88-2016. Is there any further discussion? Chris? Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Resolution number R88-2016 has been approved. Item D, direction from council on directives to a committee to appoint two council persons from the Committee for Special Event Ordinance Amendments. So what we would like to do is put together a committee to discuss the special event ordinance, including two of the council members, staff, and fire, police, and EMS to review the special event ordinance so that we can take care of any concerns that we have with any of that. Councilmember Greg McPherson and Councilmember Pat Jones have expressed an interest in the committee. Preliminary draft has been provided on the proposed committee. The purpose of the amendments is to address portions of the current code that encumber required users of the special event plans, staff processing, liability protection for the city, and evaluate the city's level of permitting on private property events that allow public participation. So I guess what we're asking for tonight is approval of the committee to be formed, including these two council members and representatives from fire.
Quick question.
Please.
Does staff think there won't be a conflict of interest in
this?
Committees or any of that?
I don't, since I'm not... I don't necessarily think there is. I can go either way. I think that being that the chamber runs that, and I'm very limited on my responsibilities of that. But I will take whatever the council decides. I have some concerns that can be addressed at that point or however. I think there needs to be some directives regarding it from council, but I can see that coming at a later date.
Mr. Roach, do you have an opinion on that?
I don't believe there will be a conflict. It's still going to make up of it and input that we can provide. Appreciate it that the goals have been made.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
So what are you wanting us to do? Just
just a motion to include Councilmember McPherson and Councilmember Jones and also fire EMS and staff to form a committee.
I move we form a special event ordinance amendment committee, consisting of staff, two council members, specifically Greg McPherson and Pat Jones, as well as police, fire, and EMS, and other members as needed.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Does the mayor have authority to just do that, or is it necessary for the council to vote?
Well, it'll...
It's just a committee.
Well, yeah, we need to form a committee, though, and it needs to be something that we usually do that by... Council vote. Okay. Motion's made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. E, discussion on splash pad. No action is required on this. Bobby Withrow, Parks Director.
Mayor, Council. I just wanted to start a discussion about the splash pad. Basically get your input on areas we need to look at putting it, as well as basic design. I don't have anything for you to decide on yet, but I am working on something, getting real close. I do have a couple pictures that I didn't include because I forgot to. If you would like to see them, I have them in the back right here. So. Basically, I just want to get the talking going.
And then if you want to give an update on, we had a open house for the night.
We did have a public outreach meeting. Nobody showed up. We did get a lot of talking on Facebook. We put it on the city's Facebook page, and then we put it on Kena Must Know as well. And a lot of people were in favor of it. I think 99% of them were. And then we did have questions about where and stuff like that. So I figured I'd come and talk to council and figure out where they want to go. We have kind of liked the idea of putting it where the old BMX racetrack was, to bring it to downtown, bring more people, keep them in downtown, with Idaho Pizza and Hippie Swirl over there. It'd bring a little bit more business towards them. But anything's open at this point. So.
And I think the other thing that we talked about, too, is it's easy access from pretty much anywhere downtown. If people come from downtown, they don't have to cross the road. They can go under the bridge there and get to it without having to be in the middle of traffic. And the design of it puts a fence down along there so that parents can have a little more control over their kids running right off into the creek. So at least it puts kind of a barrier there to keep that from happening. So if we decide to put it in that area, the only thing is we have to contact Union Pacific Railroad. It appears that we only have a couple of years left in our contract with them on the Greenbelt easements. And so we need to start discussions with them on that anyway. So certainly wouldn't want to put a splash pad on a piece of property that we don't have some control over for a few years. So that we will certainly take care of before we get any further with that direction. Richard.
Bobby, one of my concerns is to make sure there's adequate parking. Mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest thing if we have parents dropping children off. I don't know how you can have ample parking there without infringing on the pizza place down there.
Is it Domino's?
Idaho Pizza.
Pizza Hut?
Oh, I didn't know which side you were talking about. Sandstone Plaza?
Sandstone Plaza. I don't want to infringe on the business district at the expense of the city.
Yeah,
so one of the things that we've looked at is expanding the parking lot that there is at the end of where Avenue E dead ends. So we will make that into a good-sized parking lot, which would be directly above the splash pad to give easy access. And we usually have plenty of more parking here at City Hall every day, too. So.
And I did do a mock-up of the parking, and with the area that I originally planned on, we can get about 48 spaces in there.
In the cul-de-sac there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll go into the into the area a little bit, but not too much.
Okay. Okay.
And then they can park in front of your office also.
Okay. And that cul-de-sac there, you think you're going to get 48 spaces in here?
Not
a little bit onto the dirt area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not in the cul-de-sac itself. Going deeper into where the racetrack used to be, mm-hmm. Going into that area more, yeah, we can.
Okay.
And it won't look like a giant parking lot. It'll be a decent-sized parking lot.
Have you been in talks with the chief as to the location?
No, I have not.
Do you have any preference, chief, as far as enforcement, what would be easy or convenient for your officers?
Obviously safety is the most important thing. People getting in and getting out, what cost goes and whatnot. But I think you could probably talk about it.
Okay.
That area could work as long as you're parking at your address is mm-hmm. good. There's people are even dropping them off and everything. So you have to think about it.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
And I think also kids will be dropping their parents off to run through this bike path. Okay, any further questions for Bobby?
So, I mean, are we needing to engage in conversation with Union Pacific before we can even really know whether this is the option we want to go with or a viable option?
Yes, okay. We will certainly make sure that is viable before we ever even get to the point of a final decision on a location.
Okay.
Yep.
Mayor?
I plan on bringing everything in front of council and having council approve everything.
Next meeting?
Probably not the next meeting. It'll probably take a couple meetings.
But that's kind of one of the reasons you wanted to start this conversation now was just to get things going before it, all of a sudden we bring you something and it's time to make a decision that first night. So.
Yeah.
When we solicited input from the public, did we, like, give them a list of potential sites or how did we frame that in terms of...
I kind of left that open. Some people were asking, and we did say that we were looking at that site, but we never said we weren't considering other sites. I was kind of hoping for input on if people wanted it somewhere else.
One thing that I sometimes find challenging is, like, we refer to park names and assume that everybody in this room knows where they are, but not necessarily everybody else does, or maybe they refer to them by a different name or whatever. So... to the extent maybe you could think of a couple of locations that might all work out pretty well or be located in areas where, you know, we feel like within a mile of it, there's a significant enough population amount that it would make sense to put it there. And if we could do like a, I was going to say a mock-up, but honestly, all it would need to be maybe is just like a map. Mm-hmm. Showing kind of this is the park we're talking about where people could see the side streets and stuff to be able to know, oh, that, you know, that's what they mean when they say that park or whatever. And then maybe we would get better feedback or.
Okay. Yeah. So do you want me to go back out and kind of put it out there again on a location with those kind of mock-ups or.
Maybe that can happen at the same time as we're trying to engage Union Pacific, just so that we don't put all of our eggs in the basket of, like, we're moving forward with the BMX track, and then if we find out that's not really an option at all, then we have to totally start over. So if we can get some public feedback at the same time, then maybe we can explore several options at once. And
okay, yeah.
Mayor, I just had a quick comment.
Okay.
I think we have an opportunity here with this splash pad to create another destination point in this town. With already the downtown revitalization, the substantial amount of money that we're putting into that to create downtown already as a destination, I just don't want to rule out that we can possibly create another destination point with this splash pad because I think it is going to be a well-used benefit to the town. So I just want to keep that option open that, I mean, I like to see multiple destinations. So just, I don't want to rule anything out, but I agree. I think we like to see maybe a couple different options and maybe a preference even from you as our parks director.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if you could come up with like the top two to four, mm-hmm. maybe that would help people give more targeted feedback instead of just like, you know, pick a location. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we could even, like, set it up as a poll on our Facebook and maybe have it be easier that way, too. I mean, people can – we can set it so they can add an option if they have another one that they think is really great, but at least that way we would have really easy-to-digest feedback, too, in terms of percentages of respondents and stuff.
Yes, Richard.
One of the things, Bobby, would be restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
This is a total random aside that I have no idea whether it would even pan out, but I know having been a Grange member for several years, the huge lot behind the Grange doesn't have irrigation. Like the line was destroyed at some point in the past, and so not like that field is not used in any way. I don't know if they have an interest in holding on to it or not, but because we use the park for so much, Bernie Fisher, and would maybe not want to encroach on that, I have no idea what an acquisition cost would look like or if they're even interested in selling it, but it would keep another thing down there where folks already go or, you know, where there's lots of parking and kind of following on Rich's suggestion, but without taking up any of the existing parks. So just throwing it out there.
Okay. Very good. We will look into all of those things.
Cool.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks.
Ooh, a fun one. Discussion on health, dental, vision, life, and AD&D insurance renewals. John Marsh, treasurer.
Mayor and Council, for the record, John Marsh. I will keep this very brief. So, after a moment of silence, thank you.
Same here.
Actually, the good news is John's on time.
Yes, oh, that's right, that's right. You know, I have to blame my wife for that one. Okay. She's not here to defend herself, so I'm going to blame away. So, first of all, on the health, dental, and vision, and life, accidental death, and dismemberment, employee benefit policies, they're all renewing very closely in time frame, all of them in January, one of them in February. So you guys do have that information in your packet, namely the primary one is health. It's always kind of the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room. Everybody's aware of that in the marketplace today. So just wanted to go over a couple things there. The information I gave you for the health insurance on your packet has changed a little bit. We did get revised composite rates from Select Health, the city's current provider, and it changed very slightly. And so I got a handout for you if you want it. I doubt you want it. I'll give you a really high-level summary. Essentially, the rates increased 11.9%. So we had planned for 11, so we're very close in the marketplace. So it wasn't anything that we did not expect. What they have said is that the majority or the lion's share of that increase was due to market adjustment, so they had to adjust their rates to align themselves with market prices. The additional increase was related to their increase, which is about 3.1%. As long as our claims this next year don't blow up, they expect that our increase, of course they can't quote it or guarantee it, would be around the 3% next year. So staying pretty solid. There were some requests through the Department of Insurance for 20 to 30, even more increase based upon certain providers. So I think we're pretty fortunate in that regard. Any questions in that on those rates? The dental insurance, we had planned for 1%. It came in at a 2%. It's a pretty minor change. Vision insurance, we planned for 1%. We got a 0% increase. Life insurance did not increase. So all in all, between dental, vision, and life, it's probably pretty close to a wash as far as the dollars and cents go. As far as the health insurance, like I said, we planned for 11. It came in 11.9. That difference, I estimated or forecasted what that difference would be by the end of the year, which is really hard to tell until we go through open enrollment. It's about $8,171. So it certainly is absorbable. Any questions, any concerns on that piece of it at all?
Questions for John? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move on to one more discussion item related to benefits, and this applies to health, dental, vision, and that is it's domestic partners. And so domestic partners is always a sticky subject. It's not legally recognized by the state of Idaho, so insurance providers don't have to legally allow it. Our provider, Select Health, will allow it as long as our employer-sponsored plan will allow it. There is a form. There's some qualifying factors. We've got a form that they've got put together, and it just is a matter of whether or not you would be interested in allowing domestic partners. The reason I bring this up is because we've got I've had two employees approach me about it. In their situations, they both have a girlfriend, a domestic partner. They're not married, and they have a child together. So it's not something I'm asking you to decide on tonight, but I would ask that you consider it and be ready to hopefully make a decision at the next council meeting so that we can go through open enrollment and make sure that we can tell those folks yay or nay on that aspect. Is that safe? sound fair. Any questions on that at all?
Yeah, I have a question. So how are we defining domestic partner? Or, okay, like, what would you need to do to qualify as a domestic partner?
Let me hand you something out. That'll help you. It's a long definition, and it's what Select Health has put together.
The more specific, the better, frankly,
it's
for me.
It's very specific, yes, absolutely. So
I'll hand this out to Chris also. Oops, I'm sorry.
I noticed that Rhodes and Gordon apparently did not get the memo about having to grow a full beard. Is that?
Okay, so if you look front and back on this, anybody else want a copy of this? Okay. So if you look front and back on this, the front part of it is it's called an affidavit of qualifying domestic partnership. And this is what Select Health has put together as something as a requestor could present to the city's plan to request whether or not they could qualify for domestic partnership. And the definition is there. It goes through quite a bit. And then on the back side of this page, this one-page document, basically goes through a domestic partner rider, domestic partner benefits. And this is it's specific but generic to all plans that could use that in your Select Health. So it's something you can look at, take with you, draft up questions, whatever, what have you, and we can hopefully address it at the next meeting. It could certainly become a kind of a sticky subject. As you know, the legislature found it to be so and did not address it.
So we don't require like proof that individuals meet these criteria. I mean, there is like the financially interdependent proof, but in terms of like sharing a permanent residence, have resided together for at least a year.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to decide to allow this in the plan, I would think that's something you could change. I mean, you could say yes, we would like you to prove these things, and how would you prove that? Just would you provide a bill? Would you provide something? Would you provide what would it be? Again, it's fairly open-ended to that degree, but I think it's well-defined.
Okay.
John, on the back, 1F, is there a requirement of registering in the state, or how would we declare this?
Really, I think what this is, I don't believe there is in the state of Idaho. I don't think there's anything because the state doesn't recognize domestic partners. So there isn't anything. And again, this is a generic form because Select Health is in multiple states. But really what would apply, and I'll check on it. I can't answer that for sure, but I'm fairly certain that's the case. Really how it would apply would be this affidavit of qualifying domestic partnership is how we would prove domestic partnership and how that would work. Questions at all that we can address related to that, concerns, or more detail?
Okay. If nothing further, we'll just add this to the agenda next meeting. And
John, when is this all going into effect?
So open enrollment for health insurance, we renew February 1. So open enrollment essentially is on now until the end of January, but we'd like to end it sooner, better. Sooner than later, to get everybody in and report it to Select Health. Dental and Vision, this would also apply. They renew in January 1. So right now we're in enrollment. And so by the next meeting, at the conclusion of the next meeting, if you were able to make a decision, then we would be able to tell those two parties at least that we're asking if it's a viable option or not. So that's kind of here behind time.
Yeah, thank you.
A good question.
Okay.
2F.
2F.
It sounds like the other providers for health and dental have to have similar programs. Is that
yes.
possible?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so in other words, for this to be a generic form to apply to all of them, we'd want them to have a similar requirement or similar allowance. So we want to just make sure that there's nothing contradictory between the two or three plans.
And have, do all of the different benefits?
They do, yeah.
Provide for,
yeah.
Okay.
They allow it as long as the plan will allow it. The exact language, I don't have an exact copy of the language.
That's okay.
We'd make sure.
John, one more question. Are they seeking the ability to place that domestic partner on our insurance at 100% of their cost, or as considered a dependent where the city would be paying 50% of the cost?
Yeah, it would be the second alternative there, where it would be that the domestic partner would be treated just like a spouse.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is 50%.
Yeah. Thank you.
What are the other cities doing, John?
Very good question. I have not benchmarked this sort of thing. I can check. I can certainly ask around. I can actually ask Select Health if they could relay any information about generics, if any of their other plans have addressed it or not. But I just don't know for sure.
Sure would be nice if there's like a mail group for like all the city treasurers in the state of Idaho. You should get on making that if it doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, like a...
so you can like reach out to your...
listserv type of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll start that.
And one for like city clerks and one, you know what I mean? So you can...
They do have one.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah.
There's one for city clerks if you...
There's one for treasurers too, John.
Yeah, you have to carry around remember the acronym. I mean, it's like 12 characters long.
Well, I'm just wondering, it sprung to mind as like perhaps the least labor-intensive way to retrieve this information, to find out like what other cities are doing. So if somebody's a member of some mail group, that would be able to just put out the query and get that info pretty easily.
Yeah, we've got the contact folks for when we benchmarked the actual health insurance last time,
yeah.
So we can reach out to them.
Cool.
Okay. Anything further on that?
This kind of information, would it be available through Compass by any chance?
I don't think so.
Probably not. Okay. It was, I'll just tell you what we ran into when we were trying to benchmark just health insurance. 3-4 requests, 5 requests before you even got a response, and then the response was wholly inadequate. So it was really a labor-intensive process just to get information. I don't know why. Not sure why it's such a guarded secret, but.
Never occurred to you, nobody likes you?
Well, yeah. No, I'm aware of that, yes. Fully aware of that. Not a surprise. any other questions at all, any other direction? Anything, any other questions you might have?
Okay.
Okay. I know it's kind of a tough subject, but I just wanted one more thing also. Last Wednesday, the 30th of November, we did have an insurance committee meeting here at City Hall. Just wanted to make sure we put it on the record. And it was myself, Councilmember Jones, and Councilmember Cardoza. And really what we discussed is the very same things we're discussing here. I wanted to make sure that committee was aware of the new rates, premiums that are coming down. We talked about the domestic partner issue and various other minor things associated with it. And so the idea was that the insurance committee could sort of start digesting it and begin to help explain some of the things that they were seeing in the field. So if there's any questions related to that, we can certainly answer.
Okay. Very good.
Did John want to vote tonight on basically the issue of health insurance and not?
No, actually, it's okay. I'll have a resolution available next meeting where all this can be addressed.
Okay.
Yeah. make it easy.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
So the next one is discussion on utility indigent accounts and how CUNA City Council wants to address them. John
okay.
Marsh.
Yes, sir. For the record, again, John Marsh. And so under the utility billing code, it did away with payment arrangements that are provided in-house. In other words, staff no longer addresses payment arrangements from utility customers. And we moved it to an indigency request, essentially, so which would put it in the hands of the council to address at a closed meeting. So the idea is we really haven't addressed exactly how this is going to work because we've never been there before. We really don't know what to expect as far as requests go. And so we do have an event coming up, which will be December 21st, which is going to be the first time that we're going to be likely turning a fair amount of folks off and not turning them back on again until the last of the pennies owed or paid. And so that might stimulate some indigency requests. So we wanted to find out how you would want to address that, because if we shut them off, it's going to require probably a pretty short turnaround for you to meet again to determine whether or not you want to address it or leave them shut off or find out if there's some sort of an arrangement you want to make. You certainly don't want to leave them sitting there in the dark with no water. And so the thought is, in this first go-around, as those come to our, they make these requests, if we can accumulate them, and at the very next city council meeting at a closed session, we can address them in a closed session. So you'd have the information. You'd be able to look and see what variables are at play, what volumes we've got, what their requests are, and what you want to do essentially about that. Do you want to leave them turned on? Do you want to make some sort of an arrangement? Do you want to kind of work through that process and kind of let it evolve as it goes? But I want to just open it up to a quick discussion so we know how to address it as we get these requests. We haven't had a request as of the time of the publishing of this meeting, but Friday we did have one that did come in. I do have that that request. That's kind of timely.
So the first thing that pops into my head, would be like, I like having defined specific criteria because it takes the guesswork out of everything and it makes sure that we're not being subjective or treating people differently. So my gut reaction would be if we could set up some sort of parameters where if the bill exceeds a certain amount, then this happens. If it's between this number and this number, then this happens. If it's between this higher number and this other number, then this other thing happens, that sort of thing. So it might help me kind of be able to suggest what those dollar ranges might look like. If you could tell us, obviously without getting into names or anything, just a general description of what the situation where we had a request, you know, how much is owing, I guess, how far behind are they, what sort of back charge do we have, that sort of thing.
So, for example, the one that we did receive, they were at their balance, overall balance was $130.
Okay.
Right around that, give or take a few dollars. They did come in and they paid between $60 and $70, so it left, I think, $76 remaining on the account. This situation was where the person, is unemployed, explain they're unemployed, they have a significant other living with them who brings in X dollars every 2 weeks, which they gave that number, and that this person is looking for employment but is struggling to pay all of their bills. And they want to avoid shutoff, but this balance is $76. So they technically could get shut off for as little as $10 in this case because they're not necessarily that far behind. One of their requests is that they want to use their security deposit that's sitting on their account to get this account paid down. However, I'm not sure that'll solve the problem as we go forward, but it's an interim temporary solution. But the problem is that then the water deposit would be no longer existing and would essentially be violating our code, if you will, because now it's no longer available. So, but it would be something you could make that decision on. And that's the example I've gotten. We've had things in the past. You can imagine. There's all kinds of things that happen. If you can dream it up, it happens. And so the thought is, I think we were discussing it earlier today, is using some kind of a parameter setup related that's similar to the county or the state,
Okay. Mainly
the county. They use a financial parameter and approving factor. You've got to prove certain things and other variables as well. But it would give you an objective approach to look at it so that you're not having to make something that's not black and white, essentially. So that's kind of the thinking. The idea would be, I think, try to have this back to you the next meeting. Next meeting's, what is that, before the 20th? Do we have? Is it? Okay. Which is good, because the shutoff doesn't occur until the 21st. So it'd give you an opportunity to add some of these parameters in there. Just wanted to see if there's anything in particular that concerns you or a different direction you wanted to go.
I mean, I'd definitely like to see what other people have already come up with, like no point in reinventing the wheel if somebody already has. But I don't know. One of the first things that popped in my mind was for, like, a situation like that, if we would consider doing something like setting an amount in arrears that they can't exceed or something, and saying, like, we basically will give you 6 months of this, like, payment plan or whatever we want to call it, where, you know, your amount overdue is not to exceed whatever we think they can afford, like $75. I mean, I basically, like, maybe 1 month's worth, and then hopefully they're, I mean, for this specific situation, if it's an unemployment issue, hopefully it's resolved by then. And so then with the conclusion of the 6 months, the expectation is you're basically back in the position you were in today, which is to say it's going to get shut off if you don't pay it in full. And I mean, I guess we could reconsider for another year. That's just spitballing, like the first thing that popped into my head. I don't know what you guys think. But that way we at least won't let it balloon into hundreds of dollars.
Exactly. You can have a parameter. If they don't meet that parameter, it's you gotta have a deterrent. So
yeah.
Those are the things we ran into before.
And I would love to know what the other folks require in terms of proof and stuff, because I think that's important too. It'll help us not get overwhelmed with requests. I mean, I hope we don't get overwhelmed with requests anyway. But.
I'm just basing it on experience. I don't think you're going to. I could be totally wrong. Based upon the number of requests we've had over the past, based upon asking for payment arrangements and more time and things like that, the ones I was privy to, there was not a lot of in relative. So I could be totally wrong. This is a different scenario.
Do we ever suggest to these folks? I noticed this is the second bill. The bill I just received within the last like week or so was the second bill where the prorated amount of the irrigation assessment is included. Like we spread it out over basically like 10 months, right?
No.
9 months. No. I mean, is that something that we ever suggest, like right when they come in, that we can, because on request they can pay it in one chunk, right? And it's not actually due until April. Is my recollection correct?
Technically, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, is that ever something that we suggest? Because that would basically shave off $100 over the next several months.
Yeah, it's not something that we necessarily request. I mean, what we normally do is you'll have some people that want to prepay it.
Oh, okay.
We can actually go in and manually force the payment to that service and provide that credit there. But we have to basically babysit it. Because what happens in our system is we allocate everything together. It's kind of a mesh up in there, especially when somebody pays, so that we don't have to bill everything in 10 different buildings. I'd have to look at that. I don't recall off the top of my head whether the way our language is written, whether it will allow us to do that as far as bop off the irrigation. Although technically, I think you probably could. It would have to require some finagling of the language because of the way we receipt and take money in.
Yeah. I don't want to create like a whole nother headache or anything. I just wondered if that might end up. I mean, it only takes, you know, 10-ish dollars off per month, so whether it would solve anybody's problem, like in this situation, I don't know, but.
Yeah. Yes. That's a good question. It really is. And the time of the year, again, when you're in Christmas, the 21st is 4 days in advance. So, again, it's another thing for you to consider.
Richard?
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I wonder if the council would allocate a line item of a certain fund. I'm going to throw a figure out, $5,000, and leave these decisions to you, basically, since you're dealing with them on usually a personal when they come in, rather than having it come before us, having a set amount that you are allocated to use in any given year.
The way we did this in the fire district was, and it always dealt with ambulance billing. So people that really couldn't afford it, what, you know, a staff member would have a discussion with the person, and they would put all these things out, and there was some parameters that had to be met before they qualified, and then staff would come back and make a recommendation to the entire board, and then the board would decide whether to write those things off or what the appropriate action would be. I wouldn't mind doing that as long as we have those parameters set so that there is...
less subjectivity.
Yeah, subjectivity, so that I don't have a certain power to make it look like I'm favoring one person over another and that type of thing. So I certainly would have no problem with that if that's what council wants.
Does council have any objection to a set amount per year in the budget that would be for the use of the mayor for these kind of accounts to keep it coming before us, and it would also expedite the problem? Or have John be in charge of the government? just in the house.
Yeah.
I'm thinking time could be of the essence, given I'm just going to throw a figure out, that a family has a childbirth and have problems with the child and run up a bill of $200,000. I think we're small enough of a city that we should be able to compensate for that kind of problem for a city our size. So.
Well, that would certainly address the issue of timing. The shutoff happens and then it has to come to a council meeting. We would actually probably have to time the shutoffs in orchestration with the council meeting so that...
Yeah, because particularly in months where there's 5 weeks, like there's a long time between the meetings.
Sure.
I mean, since we're still trying to figure this out, do we need to delay implementation of doing the shutoffs?
Well, let me ask you this. If we go back to the drawing board here and start putting some stuff together for the next council meeting and work with the mayor and see if we can't come up with a solution that would work, maybe a couple of solutions. And then if it's something that we can work out, the next meeting is before shutoff, which is on the 21st. So that would allow us the opportunity to delay that.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we have a plan in place, and so so we have for anybody that gets shut off on the 21st,
right,
they have a more definite idea of when turn on will happen if they can't pay it.
Right. Yeah, we certainly wouldn't want to have somebody shut off and left off without addressing it before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So, my opinion. So if that's okay with the council, we can come back at the next council meeting with a course of action for you to consider. Is that okay to everybody? Okay.
Yeah.
Does the council want to give a financial amount that we want to set aside since this does materialize?
I think I'd like to see what other entities already have come up with to address it, and then maybe go from there. Because depending on what we end up implementing, I mean, if it's something like what I suggested where we basically allow them to carry a balance not to exceed a certain amount for a certain number of months, then in theory we wouldn't need to give them any money for it. We're just basically extending the amount of time in which they have to figure things out or, you know, for the situation they find themselves in to change or that sort of thing. I'm not saying I'm opposed to setting aside funds for it, but I think we can maybe wait and make that decision along with everything else at the next meeting, if that sounds okay to you.
Yeah, you got two things. You got write-offs, which are basically the money's gone, or you got extensions or payment arrangements. So I think you're pretty much talking about arrangements. And I think what you're talking about, Councilmember Pardoes, is really just, hey, we're doing away with the balance you owe because of X, Y, and Z. So I think we have a combination of those. Mm-hmm. Those things are out there. So
I'm just thinking it would be a line item that every year would be included in the budget, but that's a negotiation.
And I do agree with you. I think that's a better way of doing it than having Gordon adjust his budget to make up for unexpected non-payments and that type of thing. So
come out of contingency into that line item, basically.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
See you again.
Yes.
It's the John show, like the entire rest of it.
Consideration to approve resolution R97-2016, approving additional J&M sanitation rates. Resolution of the City of Cuna, Idaho, adopting the following fee schedule with J&M sanitation incorporated. I guess that's the end of it. And so basically all this is they're adding a service that they haven't previously had, which is a four-yard dumpster, and the math on that works out the same as what it costs per yard out of a three-yard dumpster. It's just that they're adding another service, so we're really not changing any rates or fees or anything like that. It's just approving them to use larger dumpsters. John.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Perfect.
That's it.
What he said?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. I move we approve resolution number R97-2016.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R97-2016. Is there any further discussion?
One question, John.
Yeah.
This is in addition to the 1.5 rate increase we gave just recently.
It is in the fact that it's an addition to the rate chart. So in other words, if you had a customer out there that had a three-yard dumpster on their account, or a customer that had a five-yard, they didn't have an option for either had to go too big or too small, this just fills a gap. So they would likely switch from either a five to a four or a three to a four. And that rate, as the mayor went through on that financial analysis, is reflective of the increase that all the other rates had. So it's right in line. Hopefully that answers your question. Probably not.
Does a rate increase like this have to be published?
So this is actually not a rate increase?
It's an increase.
It's actually the same fee. It's just that they've only had three-yard dumpsters and five-yard dumpsters, and now they have a four. So all we're doing is setting that we agree that this four-yard dumpster costs the same amount per yard as the others. So we're not raising any rates. They're just adding an extra service.
So they're getting a four-yard for the price of the three-yard previous?
No.
Price per yard is the same. Okay. So if you took a three-yard, divided that by three, and then multiplied that number by four, that's what this rate is on the four-yard. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Consideration to approve resolution number R98-2016, approving contracts with Express Bill Pay and Chase Payment Tech for providing electronic gateway administrative and merchant services for the city billing and receipting process. This is a resolution of the City of Kuna, Idaho, authorizing the mayor to execute contracts with Express Bill Pay, Chase Payment, and to provide electronic gateway administrative and merchant services for the city billing and receiving processes. It threw me when I read that word mayor. Hello?
Was it misspelled?
There's no Y in there.
Oh, hey, that's my fault.
Close enough. John Marsh.
Yes, Mayor and Council, for the record, John Marsh. So, in summary, what this is this is the kind of the jumping off point for taking our utility billing and additional down the road billing process and electronic payment process, more so than kind of the clunky process we have today. It involves Express Bill Pay, which is kind of our intermediary with our ERP system, which is Cassell. It interfaces directly with our ERP system, so it's basically just about as real-time as you can get. So basically, when you're a customer and you go out and you sign up electronically to get your bill electronic, you can see real-time what's going on with your bill. You can see what you've been billed historically, what you've paid, whereas today there's a lag, and it depends upon how readily our third-party billing service updates that that website. Excuse me, or the user interface. So this is more real time. The added feature is that it allows us, once a customer signs up electronically, they can, if they own a home, one of the more major problems we have is with tenants, landlords and tenants. When a landlord or a property owner sets up to receive an electronic bill or make an electronic payment, they can also set their tenant up to receive that same bill electronically, so that they're getting noticed at the same time, so there's no more of this, my landlord didn't tell me, that's why I got my water shut off, and that's going to slowly drop that shutoff rate. There's a significant amount of our shutoff folks are that exact situation. It allows us also to set up an automated auto dialer. It'll allow us to customize email messages, text messages, and phone calls to those folks that set up electronically, so we can send electronic reminders, we can send electronic notices, we can send electronic, hey, you've been shut off, types of things. So that will also assist us in kind of getting the shut off problem under 100. Right now we're about 100 a month. So that's a leaping off point. The real benefit, real good benefit, is it's a cost savings. So the more we sign up electronically, the more we save. And I wanted to kind of reflect on something really quickly, and I'm sorry I'm keeping everybody, but I know there was a kind of a social media discussion out there on why the city has its customers send their bills to a Caldwell PO box, and that's simple. It's cost and effect. It's cost effectivity. We achieve economies of scale by partnering with a third party entity that handles lockbox services. Meridian does the same thing. Idaho Power does the same thing. The last time we ran these analytics, it was about a $50,000 a year savings for us to go with that. With that program versus bringing it in-house. By the time we add employees, we add equipment to handle the receiving and the billing and the stuffing and the mailing, it's about a $50,000 bill a year. So by the time we take this electronic and we get to a certain point, we'll be even greater than that as far as savings go. So this is what it is. This is our leaping point. December 20th will be our training through Express Bill Pay. From that point on, we'll have the ability to go live, we'll get our marketing materials out, and we'll be able to start signing people up electronically. Any questions?
Is it going to go through all of our servers and everything?
Yes. So let me back up. Our ERP system, which is Cassell, is housed in-house. Yeah. All the transactions take place there, all your history's there. But what we have through Express Bill Pay is they're our gateway service, which is the same thing we have now through another entity. But their gateway is like on steroids compared to what we have. When you transact a credit card transaction, electronic check, IVR transaction, whatever it may be from an electronic standpoint, that goes through their process, their merchant services, just as it does today. So basically what it does is it takes the PCI compliance, which is payment control industry, or I can't remember what it stands for, but the credit card takes that off our back and onto them. So in other words, if
we were to have some sort of credit card fraud and we were found at fault, he'd be liable. But now it's on them. So it happens, basically, a transaction happens there. When it's done processing electronically, it ends up back on our side.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
And there's no intent to charge any type of fee to the consumer?
No. Nope. That would be something I would bring back to you guys. We do have the ability as an administrative fee. There's things you cannot do with our based upon agreements with Visa and MasterCard. There's certain things you cannot do. Governmental entities have the ability to do certain things. Charge a fee for credit card transactions, which, to be honest with you, I'm wholly opposed to. Because our objective is to get people on credit transactions and away from checks. If you charge them for a credit transaction, I personally won't use my credit card.
Same way, yeah.
So I think our expenditures take into account our merchant service fees. So we're accounting for those costs in our fees. So.
And we're actually hoping for a reduce in our costs.
Yes,
doing
absolutely.
It this way.
Every person, every account that we sign up on this electronic process will save this money. Absolutely.
Do we know exactly how much?
I don't have it in front of me. I do have it on my PC.
The reason I'm asking is, I don't know. I know in the past when we've talked about this, I specifically have suggested if we wanted to incentivize people to do this at all with like some sort of bill credit if they, you know, sign up for this and continue to utilize it for a period of time or whatever. So if that would end up being a no cost proposition, and what I mean by that is if we end up figuring out that we know we save 35 cents a month or whatever, you know, if we could calculate that out for a year and then figure out, you know, if you sign up and use it for 6 months, then you'll get that bill credit. And the idea is that by 6 months, they would have become so accustomed to it that they'll continue using it. And therefore, it would have made sense to do it. So, I mean, something like that, you know, like even just like $5 off.
Absolutely. I can provide that to you at the next meeting.
Okay.
We wouldn't roll it out till after the 20th.
Yeah.
So we certainly have time to do that. And I can run some more numbers and get you a number and see what it comes to.
Cool.
Would you be interested, I mean, the council, would it be a one-time? Or is that something you want to offer every year, recalculate every year? Just once we have them signed up, we'll give you a one-time incentive.
I think it'd be beneficial to have people do it, to just pay them a one-time thing, to take the time to set it up. And
yeah, the only thing that we might want to talk about is, like, to the extent we end up saving, like I said, let's say 35 cents per month in postage and the actual paper that we have to print and all that kind of stuff, if we decide to give them, like, a $5 bill deduction and we do it at the very first time, they could easily just, okay, I'm going to pay it online for this month only to get that $5 off, and then I'm going to go back to paper. So that was why I was thinking, like, if the incentive could be tied to utilizing the online bill pay for some period of time that we hope would, I mean, they say, like, it takes 30 days to break a habit, but you don't pay this bill every day for 30 days. So if we can figure out, like, what we think the sweet spot would be in terms of they've done it this many times, and that would have been enough time to get accustomed to it, to decide they like it, to say they want to keep doing it. And so that's where we would have the incentive kick in, or we could do the bill credit on the front end, but have them acknowledge, like, make it really clear that if they don't use the bill pay for 6 months, then that credit will be, you know, re-deducted. So anyway, they would end up owing an additional $5 for not maintaining the service. So that way they would get it on the front end, like something like that. I just want to make sure that we don't lose money on the whole proposition, if that makes sense.
Put together models that show it both ways.
Okay.
Kind of see how it'll work.
Yeah. As long as it's not too administratively difficult, I think if we could offer the reduction on the first use with the note that they have to continue doing it or else we'll take that discount back. Okay. That might end up being enticing enough because people don't like deferred gratification.
You got it.
Good. John?
Yes.
On the fees, on page 8 of 32, I think it is, or whatever. Number 5, there's a monthly account keeping fee, but it says it can be waived if we keep $25,000 minimum balance. Is that something we're doing, or is that something we can't do legally, hold that type of money, put that money in an account, or what's the intent on or our intention on that?
If I'm not mistaken, some of those fees, and I think that one in particular, is not something we're charged. It's kind of confusing the way they have it worded.
only if we are having them do certain administrative, provide certain administrative services, does that kick in. And what I mean by that is if we have, we use them as a lockbox service. In other words, our, if people, there's going to be people that are still will continue to send their check in. It's got to go to the P.O. box the way we've got it set up now. That's a lockbox service. They take it, they apply it to the account, they send us a flat file, we import it. It's kind of clunky. We could use them, but that would then go to Utah. And I think people have a problem with it going to Caldwell.
Yeah.
Utah.
Yeah, okay.
So that's really what that applies to. And they've listed them kind of generically, and that is if they're doing lockbox services. So it wouldn't apply.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I wanted to make sure you were aware, you probably already are, because this looks like an older agreement. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, Richard pointed that out. Okay. Yes, it was something they, there were some other fixes they made in there, and they didn't get it to us until Friday morning. Sorry, Chris. And so didn't have a chance to vet out those little things.
But, yeah. Also, like the physical address as well as like the email address and the, all that.
Okay.
So as long as you're totally on that. The website, that's the word I was struggling for.
Any other questions or comments or concerns? And really what we're looking for tonight is the approval for the mayor to sign these agreements with Express Bill Pay and Chase Bank Payment Tech. Mm-hmm. And we can move forward and get going.
Okay. Any other questions for John? Okay.
I just accidentally navigated away. Hang on. I'm getting there. I move we approve resolution R98-2016.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution R98-2016. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
You may sit down now. Number eight, A, ordinances. This is one that Council Member Jones actually found that was one of those that's kind of ambiguous in that a train can't block a crossing for more than 5 minutes, which is almost impossible because it takes them longer than that to drive by unless they're... So basically what we're looking at, I don't know if Richard would like to explain what he came up with here for a solution.
Mayor, Council, for the record, Richard Rhodes. I did notice there was a merge issue here, so the stuff in blue should not be there in that ordinance, so I'll correct that. In any event, Council President Jones inquired about this and if we were enforcing it and the potential liability to the city. Essentially, this says that the vehicle or the train can't block that movement for more than 5 minutes. I did then spend some time on the internet looking. The question I had was federal preemption, the railroad, the FRA. Apparently, they just kind of have decided no. I think in the early 2000s, the federal government commissioned a study that turned out to be almost 240 pages of the different jurisdictions that basically said, yeah, we have a problem, but we don't really know what to do with it. And the time limits vary, typically 15 to 20 minutes or so. Kino's the only one I could find that had a five-minute limit. The question then being, what if we're not enforcing this? With a misdemeanor citation for every train? what potential liability could there be if there was an emergency vehicle that was delayed? And so then state code in Title 49 has it at 20 minutes, so it's covered by state code, so the decision was made that let's just repeal this out of the city code and let the state code deal with it, which has a more reasonable period of time. Falling within probably that range that almost every jurisdiction that has dealt with this has determined that that's appropriate. I think a train going 20 miles an hour or something would block this just about every single time, regardless of if they're stopping or they're going to delay that. So based upon that, I'll stand for any questions.
Just out of curiosity, what does Idaho state law say about 20? Okay. Thanks.
So basically, the request here is just to repeal this code, right?
Correct.
Take it out entirely.
By approving an ordinance, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2016-34.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to consider waiving three readings of Ordinance Number 2016-34. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2016-34.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Ordinance Number 2016-34. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza? Yes. Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2016-34.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance 2016-34. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Ordinance number 2016-34 will become law upon publication. 8B, consideration to approve Ordinance number 2016-35, repealing Ordinance 2012-14. This was one that was actually put together when we were trying to promote for contractors to build in the city of CUNA by offering them not having to pay all of their permitting fees until an occupancy permit was issued for residences and that type of thing. This process is actually quite ambiguous for staff to follow up on when anyone does that type of thing, and I really believe we don't, I think it's not something that we need anymore. We don't seem to have trouble promoting for builders to build in CUNA now, so basically what we're asking for is just to take this back off the books and
okay. Get
back to normal.
I move we waive three readings of Ordinance number 2016-35.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance number 2016-35. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2016-35.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance number 2016-35. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza? Yes. Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2016-35.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance 2016-35. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Ordinance number 2016-35 will become law upon publication. Mayor Council discussion items. I was approached by one of our employees that had asked if it would be possible to use the funds that we collect from our scrap iron bins to create a dedicated fund for employee lunches and banquets and that type of thing. What we have is scrap iron bins where we put old pipe and old hydrants and things like that that basically get recycled. It's something that doesn't really cost the city anything. I believe we use Pacific Recycling to drop off those bins, and they also come and drop them off and pick them up and leave an empty one when they come and that type of thing. So it's really not anything that costs anything to the city. The request came and it was also mentioned that it would be probably a good thing because then employees would be a little more apt to recycle where they might normally not be, so they want to keep that bin full, so it would also help to promote recycling. So I just kind of wanted to bring this before council and see if that would be something that you would be in favor of. It's not really we haven't had a fund like this for several years, and we haven't had the ability to have those kind of lunches and banquets. And Personally, I think it's a good thing for the employees to every once in a while get a kudo, and where it actually doesn't cost the city anything here, then in my opinion, it would be appropriate, but I wanted to get council's take on this.
So if we stop doing the employee appreciation luncheons, like the last one I was aware of, or was invited to, I should say, is was one in the park. It was like a, I thought it was like employee appreciation slash going away party for, I can't remember which employee was retiring at that point.
That was Linda, her retirement. Actually, that was the city barbecue, and we just incorporated that, and everybody potlucked or paid their own, I think. There was some, maybe there was city contribution, I can't recall, but I want to say I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know that they've been, they haven't been, like, city-funded, but my recollection was always on the day of that luncheon or barbecue or whatever it was, everybody who attended got to go home for the rest of the day. So they also got, like, a paid afternoon. Is that accurate?
That is correct. We just haven't done it in a couple of years. Okay. It was discontinued.
Yeah, and I think the last time we had any kind of a funded banquet or anything like that, I think Mayor Nelson and I and Richard probably and maybe a couple other people made donations just to kind of help fund the thing. And
well, I'll speak up because I was the one who had issue with the old process and I think was the catalyst for not doing it anymore. My perspective comes from the federal government where it's completely forbidden for the government to spend money on feeding its employees with some limits, with some exceptions, meaning like if you're away from your duty station, you would get a per diem because you're not close enough to home to be able to feed yourself, and they're forcing you to be away from home. I feel like we try really hard to be fair and generous to employees. We pay 100% of insurance premiums, which I'm not aware of any other employer, certainly the federal government doesn't do remotely close to that. We're paying for half of spouses and dependents to get coverage. Folks are getting 13 days of paid sick leave a year plus a minimum of 13 days of vacation a year with the ability to get much higher than that as they work longer, up to 26 days of paid vacation a year. You get, I think, 10 paid holidays, 7 to 10 paid holidays. And when we were doing these appreciation banquets, they also got a full half day paid off. So I feel like we try to be really fair and generous, but I just have issues with the idea that the entirety of the population of CUNA has to pay for our employees to have lunch on any given day when normally the employees would be responsible for paying for their own lunch, and I just don't see like it's that difficult to do potluck. I wasn't able to come to the potluck Thanksgiving luncheon, but I think we've done that for a couple of years now, and it seemed like it was working out okay. That's how we do holiday parties in the federal government or any sort of like birthday, whatever thing is everybody just kind of pitches in, and that's how we run it. And usually the lunches end up running a little bit longer than the allotted lunch time, and you don't end up having to take leave for that, and that's also kind of a nice little thing. So I think my personal preference would just be to continue with that. And I think I also have a strong expectation that if we, in terms of the scrap metal, if it's city property, my expectation is that employees would always be required to recycle it because it's city property. And so we get to decide what happens with it. And we shouldn't just be throwing away anything if it has a monetary value.
Yeah.
But that's kind of an aside. So that's my two cents, but I'm willing to hear what other people have to say.
I think kind of the point of that was like sometimes I'll be a small fitting or something, and rather than take it to a scrap bin, they just throw it away. And probably I think what they're thinking is they'd start stacking them in their pickup and then haul them in, which you're right, they should do anyway. But I guess my thought on it was I thought this would just be a good way where the city's actually not spending any money on that type of thing. But I don't know what anybody else thinks about that.
Mayor, I would probably concur with what Brianna said. My other hang-up I have with this is that all the funding that is used to create the scrap or the unused or the units that are no longer working is taxpayer money. I think it just needs to go back to the taxpayer. So I would not be in support of it. I think that's the right thing to do. It may not be the popular thing, but I think the right thing to do is, from my opinion, is to give the money back where the money came from.
Okay.
I just want to reiterate real quick, too, that to the extent the employee appreciation, like barbecue day, or has been discontinued, that certainly was never my intent. Like, I mean, I think it would still be fun to have some sort of, like, potluck or some sort of activity where we get to, you know, acknowledge the hard work that our employees put in, and then to the extent you, as the leader of the city, decide that it is still appropriate to give them the afternoon off, like, that's a nice little perk. Even if it's a potluck lunch, then they still get to go, you know, do whatever for us for the rest of the day. So I definitely am in favor of continuing that sort of tradition. Okay. To the extent it ended because people thought that that was my preference, that's not the case.
No, we never blamed you once.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Okay. Anybody else have any comment on that?
I guess I'll put my foot in my mouth. I think for the last 10 years I've gone to those picnics in the park, and I think it's kind of nice to have a little town atmosphere where the council can meet some of the employees. I have a feeling that the scrap metal is probably going to be deep sixed if we don't have a recycle bin. It'll be easier to deep six it if they think that money is going to be used to benefit the get-together, as we call it. I think you're more apt to see more scrap iron being allocated to that fund. I think we're still a small town, that we should be appreciating the size of the town, the size of the workload. I do see employees sometimes two or three in the pickup, but I think they're all going to the same work job. We do pay maybe a little better than other towns, but there's a lot of loyalty that we depend in this little town because we don't have these supervisors that big cities would have. To allocate one day in the summer where they can all get together, and I'm not sure that it's city money or city taxes that pay for it. It is their own motions of recycling that would pay for that. There is most of it, if I remember right, is brought in by the employees. What little is purchased is usually the meat I've been revisiting in the past. So I still think that we're small enough that there should be these banquets, if you want to call them that, whatever you want to give as to a terminology. But if we start doing away with that, I think we're losing the loyalty of a small town employee-based benefits. So, you know, when I first started, they used to have steak and prime rib on Christmas. And I was the first to object to that. I felt guilty about eating prime rib when I knew times were tough and some of the taxpayers were home eating hamburger. But in this case, I don't think the funds are coming from the general fund. They're just funds that are arranged by the employees for the benefit of themselves. Again, I still think it keeps the small town atmosphere where we expect a little bit more from our employees than a big company would or a big city where where they have supervisors to maintain control over those. I think our employees are still pretty much on their own out there. They're directed and supervised to a certain degree, but there could be a lot of loafing going on that we would not see. So, to me, this is just the benefit of working for a small town by having the annual picnic at the Bernie Fisher Park. So, I know I go against the principle, but I still believe in a small town and loyalty from the employees.
Thank you. You want to?
I'll I'm going to side with Richard a little bit on this. And I'll base it back to, at the fire department, we would be donating cars to be able to extricate and whatnot. Now, people would come in and sign their title over to the department itself. They would then allow us to cut the car up, whatever, and recycle the vehicle. And, you know, there at times, cars were $250, $300 a pop. Pickups were a lot more. The department would then allow the Employees Association to spend that money as fit. Because it wasn't something they budgeted on getting. They didn't know how many cars they were going to get a year, much like the scrap bins. I mean, certain years they might not get $150 out of them, which would go a long ways towards a morale-boosting banquet. But we would use that money to buy stuff we thought the department needed that maybe they didn't think we needed, more stuff in the kitchen. You know, we also funded a picnic that we did off-site from the station at a guy's house with money from the cars. A great morale booster for the employees. I don't know about the half day off afterwards. I don't know if I want to weigh in on that one just yet, but a get together that's funded off something that essentially didn't cost anybody anything. And it's not something that the budget of the city needs to sustain itself. I would vote heavily for the picnics with the scrap them. I mean, what kind of dollar figure do we even have?
I don't even know for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean the scrap bin.
How much did the scrap bins?
If they dump the scrap bin and it's minimally heavy, it's going to be $150.
Okay.
And then they might do that, I don't know how many times they come get it, probably a couple times a year.
Okay.
It wouldn't be substantial.
So, possibility
anyway.
We'd still have to chip in some potluck style, but
yeah.
I'd be all for it.
Well, we could always, we also give $20 gift cards to everybody.
At Christmas.
But we
yeah.
could just not do that and spend that money for it instead.
Yeah. Well, no, I just brought it up for discussion. It was an employee idea, and I thought that it was worthy of discussion, so we have a split vote on a discussion item.
Mayor, I just want to ask something before we vote on this.
Well, we're not voting. This was a discussion item.
Well, I'd like to add something to the discussion. A couple of things that were said that I'm a little concerned about, I guess. You know, Greg, what you had said, I agree with you 100%. I think that, you know, if somebody donates a car to you, they're giving up that right to that car or to whatever it is and everything. Mm-hmm. I think what you guys have done at the fire department is in line. But the metal that we're getting and stuff is not donated. It is, most of it is purchased with money that we have taken from people. And that's where I hesitate, and I'm still a little concerned that we'll be rewarding people to do the right thing. If we start incentivizing people to recycle in that, then I think we're setting a precedence, and I'm concerned about that. Like I said, I know what I'm having to say is going to be taken differently than what I'm meaning, but I just don't see why we have to reward somebody for doing the right thing, reward somebody to do a good job, and reward somebody to be loyal. I think that everything that we've offered through our benefit package should be enough. So I'll
Well, that's why I brought it for discussion. We don't have to do. I mean, it's the level of reward that we're looking at here, so it's not that we have to or we don't have to. I just thought it was something worth bringing up. So, anyway.
I want a rebuttal. When I say reward, maybe that's not the right word. It costs us a lot of money to train our employees, studying in the school, on-the-job training. Whenever an employer, be it city or private, makes an individual feel welcome, you're more apt to retain that employee in the long run. If it only takes a picnic to make a person feel welcome in the city or his employer, I think it's well worth it. It is city products, but again, if we don't have an incentive for them to recycle it, I could almost guarantee you if I worked for the city, I'd throw it in the back of the pickup, and then when I got where I was going, throw it in the trash. It's probably not the right thing to do, but it's a simple thing to do, the easiest thing to do, to recycle it. That's my feeling. Sure, we give them benefits, but we expect loyalty for that benefit. And you build on those loyalty by giving more non-paid benefits, I think, to employees. I think you're more appreciative that they know the employer is thinking of them that one time a year. Again, we used to give the picnic, and we also gave the dinner at Christmas. I was totally against the Christmas dinner because of the cost was, boy, I think 10 years ago it was about $15,000 to $2,000, which that really irked me as a taxpayer. So this, I don't think it's really coming out of the budget per se. It's just the accumulation of scrap iron that could end up in the garbage.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm not going to talk about it, but it sprung an idea in my head, which is, in my workplace, we have a best practices month where you can like submit ideas throughout the year, and then during that month, all of the ideas that have been submitted for the preceding year are reviewed, and we decide if there are any best practices. And in my agency, they choose to reward those with a cash award. But the whole idea of ways, like, it sounds like we've already been doing the scrap metal recycling thing, so it's not necessarily a new idea. But in keeping in mind the idea of, you know, we're stewards of the public fisc, we're supposed to be making sure that we make good decisions and are spending money thoughtfully and stuff like that, as a completely unrelated thing, I would be willing to entertain some sort of a proposal related to like a best practice program where employees can come up with ways that we can work smarter or faster, not harder, you know, or ways that we can save money. And you know, they can submit those throughout the year, and even submitting ideas that they've already come up with themselves and then implemented, and they can explain how much money it saved or why it's been a good thing. And then we can pick like maybe one or a handful depending on the year and how good we think the ideas are, and then give them some sort of a reward for implementing those or, you know, coming up with ways to work smarter and stuff. So if that's something that we would be interested in thinking about, I would be happy to share kind of how we've structured it at least.
That would be very good.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. That. I think that would create a lot more.
So yeah, sometimes it's hard to be innovative. So with, just kind of the focus on that, it helps sometimes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
I attended just before council meeting. The Boys and Girls Club had a grand opening. The Ross School has provided some rooms for Boys and Girls Club, so they have a room up there with a pool table in it and foosball tables, and the kids were down there screaming and broke my hearing aids. But it's very exciting to see that now We have something that reaches beyond the summer program. The Gordons and the Yamamotos and the Thorntons and probably quite a few other people have worked very hard over the past 10 years to bring something to CUNA, and we finally have at least a beginning to it. So
yeah.
That was very nice to see. And now I get to brag a little. I actually was the winner for our division for the Mayor's Walking Challenge.
Nice.
So I won $2,000 for health and fitness type of projects for the Youth Council to figure out what to do with and get into the...
I think it would have to be like a track meet in order to qualify, right?
The Blue Cross put sideboards on that check. She said they used to actually write the check to the specific mayor who won, and then they were supposed to donate it to the city and stuff, which they always did, but it always came out around election time, during campaign time, so it didn't look good, so they quit doing that. But so mine just went City of CUNA. Anyway, so I put a million steps in a month and 500 miles, and now I need a hover round. Anyway, so does anybody else have anything we want to discuss or talk about?
I don't think so.
Mayor,
yeah.
Do we? I know we've talked about this a couple of times. Do we have an update on? Are we still going to do the employee badges or? What we were deciding on that for the security purposes.
Pat, I do apologize. I dropped the ball on that one. I will have an update with the card printer and all the software we need next council meeting.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening, and thank you for coming out.